Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hi, everyone. This is Alan Shark, and welcome to another podcast, Shark Bites, part of CompTIA. I am the Executive Director of the Public Technology Institute and proudly part of CompTIA. So welcome to another episode. And if you're liking these episodes, we ask you to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts these days. We focus on technology leadership. And today we're going to do just that. We're very honored to have two folks that I know and I've known for many, many years. Today we have Karen Robertson and we have Claire Bailey. Welcome both of you.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, great to be here, Alan.
So, Karen, you are currently the CEO and founder of KWR Acuity Strategies. You're the former CIO for the state of Texas for just over 5 years and worked in the Texas governor's office for some 10 years before that. And then also joining us, of course, Claire Bailey, Vice President of Business Development, now also at KWR, but formerly served as director CTO for the state of Arkansas for some 23 years. I could go on about the awards that you have received from NASIO and elsewhere, all the other things that you have done, but I've got to start with, how did you get to where you are? So when you woke up one morning, did you say, I mean, some people say, I want to be a scientist, an engineer, airline pilot. What got you into tech? Let's start with you, Karen, and then we're going to do the same for you, Claire.
Great. Thanks, Alan. Technology just landed, and it was, I was running small local government campaigns. I did city council races, school board races, county commissioner races. And of course, that was when technology first started, and I had to figure it out. I mean, the old computers that we had, and we were creating databases of contributors, and it was just a lot of face-to-face, but then I'd go back and we had to provide all these reports for legal reasons. So I started taking classes at UT at night, and someone suggested at one point, my girls were a little bit older and I could be gone longer. So there's a job over at the Capitol. You should go check it out. Well, I walk in and basically they said, have you filled out the application? And I said, no, well, we need you. So I immediately started working at the Capitol in the House of Representatives on that side. The Lieutenant Governor's office was creating they called it a MAC team. And while I was in this technology school and learning, I got assigned to the Lieutenant Governor's office, and that was Bob Bullock at the time. And then laptops became popular. The Senate floor needed all the support, and I was that gal. So the joke is I was the laptop girl for when the senators were first getting their laptops. And I learned projects, and you know, the rest is history. The Lieutenant Governor left at that time, and I went to work in Governor Bush's office, and then Perry came over and I started working in IT in his office.
Let's go back a little bit further. Growing up as a little girl, I mean, did your family encourage you to get into technology? Did they buy you Tinker Toy, advanced toys? I mean, where was that spark where you just fell into it?
I think the spark was in customer service. My dad was an engineer at NASA. And I kind of paid attention to that because we were growing up in that era of the astronauts, and it was cool. I mean, we were those little kids sitting in front of the TV watching our neighbors take off and go to space. But my mom's family was in the restaurant business, and we would get calls, or I would get calls from my grandfather, and he'd say, "What are you doing?" And before I could finish my sentence and say nothing or homework, he would say, "Well, I've just bought a bunch of cigars and I need you to be the cigar girl today." And I said, "Well, Grandpa, I don't know about cigars." And he said, "Well, you're going to learn." So I had both sides, right brain, left brain. I had to be creative and learn how to sell cigars and not know anything about it, be a hostess in a restaurant, shuck oysters whenever that was needed, and then also be part of that space station stuff going on and try to understand what my dad was doing. Little side note, later in life, my dad was asked to go back and do some consulting with NASA. He calls me and he goes, now, what are you doing? I don't really know how to tell my friends exactly what your job is. And I was already CIO.
That's an amazing story. Claire, where was the spark in your life?
So it is interesting when you look back on childhood things. I was the youngest, or I still am, I guess. I'm the youngest of six, although I've aged in dog years through my career, but choices. But I was the youngest and the youngest of six, and my father had a produce company. And if a piece of equipment failed, like a adding machine or a cash register or a typewriter, I would fix it. They would bring it home. They would get something else, but they just let me play with those types of toys. And then you fast forward, always had an interest in government. I went to Girl State in the state of Texas in 77, summer of 77, asked back to be there to work on the paper there in Seguin, Texas in 78. And that gave me my love of public policy. I wrote my first letter to a congressman when I was about 6 years old, because I watched a 60 Minutes episode on how we should ensure that the onesies babies wore, everybody then back used to smoke and their ashes would, I mean, it sounds horrible, but that's a culture we grew up in. And these onesies that the babies were in were highly flammable. And I just thought that's ridiculous. The government should establish standards. So fast forward to growing up in Paris, Texas, the second largest Paris in the world. Everybody knows that about me. My father was a victim of a heat issue in 1980. And we had these horrible consecutive days of degrees over 100. And he passed away due to a heart attack. His medical records were not accessible. And I thought it's 1980s. And he had seen a heart specialist recently without sharing it with us, the family, or my mother. But it was in the same hospital system. And the emergency room doctor, we had just changed to where we had ER doctors, not your family doctor. Back in the day, if you went to the hospital in Paris, Texas, your family doctor was called. We just 1980 changed over. And as we reviewed the processes, I'm just a Virgo, systems analytics runs in my brain all the time. I began to see why it's 1980. Why haven't we corrected this with computer systems? And even today, I still fight that battle. So that championed me to change my degree plan from journalism and being an English major, because I wanted to teach, and to becoming a computer science graduate in 1984 from East Texas State University, which is now part of A&M. I think about that often now when we talk about workforce and diversity and encouraging people to become interested in technology at a very early age. For me, it was the environment that I was raised that whatever you think or want to do, you can do it. Don't let the word can't be in your vocabulary. And just figure it out. And I think that comes from being the baby of six and figuring out how to get food at the family dinner, because the plate was always empty by the time they passed it to you. Or if it's how to ensure that we can get public sector access to every component of a rural state like Arkansas, how do we leverage mobile devices versus thinking traditionally about the way people go into an office? So that's my background and my journey. And what I think Karen and I definitely have in common is not only our passion for improving things, but we grew up in that customer service. If people don't want to use your services, they have a lot of options. So how do you ensure what we deliver is truly what the citizens need across the nation?
So both of you, you know, answer the call of public service, which is really cool. I feel I have done the same thing even in the nonprofit world in my career. So Karen, how do you explain your tenure? You know, when we look at the average tenure of a CIO at the state level, it's usually anywhere from 18 to 24 months, very much dependent on politics and the whims of the governor. You were there for well over 5 years and 10 before that. What do you owe to your longevity? Because that's unusual, let alone being a woman.
So if you count all my years with state service, it was 21. Prior to that, you know, I did the political campaigns. But when I was asked to go over and consider taking the CIO role and the executive director role at the Department of Information Resources. I did not raise my hand and volunteer. I was asked by the governor's office, the chief of staff, to go over and try to help sort out what was going on with the consolidation project, which was a huge project. And I saw myself living through the governor's office as the director of administration. I had technology, had other divisions that reported up, and it was a dream job for me. So what kept me going and what got me through the longevity was I had the support of leadership. I had the background, I had the connection. I also was told that if I wanted to go back to the office of the governor, I had my parking spot back. But after 9 months over there, I started to see how we could build relationships and build and fix basically what was broken and be part of the solution and not the problem. So we even through NASIO relationships, I really did learn a lot about how other states were being handled and other agencies and the challenges. But having the background, the relationships within the agency, my national relationships with folks like Claire and yourself, lots of listening and participating. So, and I would come back and report that to the governor's office, and they just said, keep going as long as you can.
So you had a staying power because of your leadership and the reputation that you delivered. Claire, I'm assuming the similar story, but I want to hear it from your words.
My journey was different than Karen's because I worked in the agency where I was appointed to be director of information systems through a series of growth opportunities. So for example, Governor Huckabee first learned of me when we had a project. We had implemented a new revenue automation system the year before. And Governor Huckabee's fascinating to me. He's an amazing leader, but he always had his vision on what his next steps were going to be. And those next steps at that time included running for president. So he was all about leveraging and moving Arkansas forward with technology. One of the strongest supporters of technology I've worked with in my career from a political perspective. So when you look at that approach, I was one of those people, remember, I don't say can't, and we had implemented a new mainframe system the prior year, and we made the news because no one could get through a DMV office, a motor vehicle office, to get their driver's license and to get their car tags renewed. It stopped. And so we got a lot of funding to create a way to renew your car tags online. Now, remember, this is around the 97, 98 timeframe. And we had just embarked on Arkansas.gov. A lot of different things were happening. And they came to me to lead that state project. And every day, the agency director at the time would look at me and say, how's my favorite project? I'd say, we're fine, Mr. Hip. He did not like to be called by his first name. And I said, we're fine. And he said, you do realize that if this does not work, you're fired. And I said, yes, sir. And that was about every single day of that year-long project. Needless to say that when we worked together, we had a dream team, and that's part of our success process. That success of that project then got me recognized at the leadership level with Governor Huckabee's team. And fast forward to some of the times that happened across transitions, and I was recommended to lead the agency. And so I knew the teams, knew the agencies, had already had established relationships with our partners, which is critical to any leader's success. It's not just about your team, but how you work throughout the technology community, whether you're city, county, state, local, I don't care, federal, global, you have to have those relationships that span and build that trusted network. It's also about actions that you can activate a team, knock that ball out of the park, be successful. Not every project's going to be successful, but learn from it and move forward. So that was, I'll use the Southern term, we could get it done. And so after that, we had an election, and then the Democratic Party and another amazing governor had the best of breed across political parties, Governor Mike Beebe, amazing leader. And I was reappointed. And one of the things that we worked on together was how do we ensure for around a public safety network, how do we ensure that wherever you are in the state of Arkansas, when you call 911, you get answered and you can dispatch a radio to that. And that, and again, these are high level strategic goals with executable projects that lead up to ensuring you can achieve those goals. That requires legislative support. Sometimes you had the majority of the legislature in one party, sometimes you didn't. But at the end of the day, in my tenure in Arkansas, all of us, regardless of political party, were trying to move that needle further for the state of Arkansas. And that was the fun part of being in public service. And the secret to, is there a secret to being kept or your longevity in government? It ties back to your passion. It ties back to those relationships, but it also ties back to getting projects completed, securing the infrastructure, maximizing the dollars, making sure you're compliant with all of the rules and regulations at the state and federal level. You name it, all of those things come in together. And we worked with the Arkansas Institute of Performance Excellence, which was a quality-based organization, to have external insight come in and audit us to make sure we were meeting those components. So long answer to say it's about your relationships, it's about your actions, and it's about making sure you're continuing to move your state forward.
And I like your comparisons in terms of the political environment in which you worked. I work with many colleagues across the country, and I like to believe that when it comes to technology, it should be politically agnostic. And I see that the federal government, regardless of how we see things at the national level, I have been so inspired by the continuity, even from the last administration, the one before that, that the folks at the federal CIO in the last administration was from Texas. And she was great. I enjoyed working with her. And they just passed the mantle, you know, that upper level, you know, let them fight it out. But that technology layer, you know, they just build upon the success of the other. So I want to jump ahead because you both have such incredible, stellar reputations to this day. What can be done to attract more women, not only in technology, because I think there are tons of women in technology, it's technology leadership. Now, you both know that's something that I have dedicated myself to for the last decade through our certification programs. And there are plenty of women in technology. There is a shortage in the leadership field. Any ideas that comes to mind?
Karen, if you don't mind, I'll jump in first, is that one of the things that we see and we have seen, and we've worked together along with a dear friend of ours, Jennifer Axe, to build a group of women who get together regularly during COVID. After hours, we labeled it Gov Gals. Jennifer came up with the concept and is our leader. But at the same time, we reach out to men and women, but women network differently. When we see a new female CIO be appointed, we want them to know, in truth, just like technology is politically agnostic, I grew up in a world, probably because I'm the youngest of five girls, one boy, being a girl didn't matter. I was offered the same opportunities. So I didn't grow up in a world where, oh, you can't do that because you're female or you're not included. So I have zero expectation that anybody makes a judgment on my leadership skills because I'm a female. Now, that's my perception. And how do we ensure that all people, male and female, see it the same way, that we're working to build that those skills and that leadership goal at the same time, that it's regardless, it's your skills, it's how well you do your job. So we're working together to build that network to just help people understand you can do anything you set your mind to do. And if you want that CIO job, one of the questions earlier on was, did you just grow up thinking I want to be the CIO for the state of Arkansas? No, but when I was in the organization, I did say that I wanted to own my own building and be named after my my magazine that I created. So that's still going to happen. But the other part to that was, no, but I did, when I worked in the agency, say repeatedly, when I'm the CTO and director of this agency, we're not going to do it this way. And so I did have that goal to change things, particularly for the peers and for the team, so that we could do things the way they needed to be done in the agency. But let's network and let's get this feeling out there that you can be anything you want to be.
And as you know, CompTIA is totally behind that in everything. So we're there for you. Karen, your thoughts on that?
Well, I want to go back a little bit on the GovGals. That was an idea that came together. And while we were all quarantined, Claire and Jennifer and I realized that a lot of these women coming into those roles, we didn't really get to know folks unless we were at the national events, of which, you know, where we were all bombarded by our peers, our vendor partners and the likes. But through GovGals, we actually got to talk offline. There was no selling of product. We talked about shopping, and we really enjoyed getting to know the likes of some of these new lady CIOs coming into their roles and on a personal level. So it is about, to me, it's really about the relationship that you've established, and it's about trust. And I mean, we would show what we shopped for that week or month, depending on how long it'd been since we had the call. And we really, not just at the CIO level for states, but we dug down and really talked to folks at the county level and the city level. Lots of guys wanted to get on our calls, so we invited a couple times. I think Doug was on our call once. And we just shared that idea. And one of the groups that I'm a member of in Texas is TASC. And this year we worked for all year on, I was on a couple of committees, and one of the breakout sessions is called Women in Technology. And again, the guys wanted to be involved in that group. So this year we opened the doors and let them come. We always have, it's just a bonding time, and you don't really get to enjoy the other ladies and encourage the up and coming leaders unless you're in a setting and you talk about things that you could expand on and develop those trusted relationships.
It's also, we talked about struggles too, and not just the struggles of the job struggles, but well, we did talk about how are you surviving not being in the office? Because for a lot of people, and I've been remote for over 6 years now, so it wasn't a change for me, but for a lot of the government people, that's hard. And how do you continue to lead that way? How do you shift? And then a lot about my shopping addiction.
Well, we did.
I don't want anyone, I hope my son never watches this podcast.
We did have a couple of CIOs that were participating from their basements. So, you know, we as CIOs, I was spoiled. I had a team, I had behind me, I had IT, I had a room, I had an office with a view, and everyone had to pivot. Everyone had to make do with the new challenges. So we really kept this group going, and it's been fun. And it's not as if somebody says, well, what does GovGals think? But they are reminded because we do have our little Instagram and our posts. So
cool. Well, listen.
I have a commemorative glass.
I wasn't going to say that, Claire.
I know, but it's Alan, and this is a podcast, and we need our people to be entertained. And it shows a little bit about our style too. So
it does. It does. And you're just beginning. So there is so much more to discuss. If you don't mind, can we come back at the next episode and continue this conversation, because we're just beginning to scratch the surface? And so I'm seeing nods. Yes,
absolutely.
So let me just say that we are having a fantastic conversation with Karen Robinson and Claire Bailey. They've agreed to be in the next episode. So join us for our next episode. And by all means, subscribe to Shark Bites wherever you get your podcasts. Again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.